Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Hello there and welcome back to another episode of This Song Is Yours. I'm your host, Simon Fink, and today we've got a real treat for your ears. Joining us on the pod is the incredibly talented Master Peace. Fresh off the release of his sensational debut record, which is titled How to Make a Masterpiece, Master Peace himself is here to share all the juicy details about his journey into the world of music. Hailing from the UK, Master Peace has crafted a sound that effortlessly blends the best of 2000s Indian electro vibes while adding his own unique twist to the mix. His music draws inspiration from the indie sleaze era, yet also manages to sound completely fresh and contemporary in 2024. Now, in today's episode, we're diving deep into the sonic landscape of Master Peace's debut record. From the infectious beats of Block Party to the psychedelic melodies of MGMT and the infectious grooves of Friendly Fires, we'll be exploring all the influences that have shaped this incredible album. That's not all. We will be chatting to Master Peace as well about his musical journey, from his humble beginnings in rap music to finding his authentic voice in the indie scene. Plus, we'll also be getting an inside look on some of his favorite Australian artists. Heads up, the Veronicas are definitely on this list. Now we want to say a massive thank you to Dave for helping us make this episode happen. And hey, if you're loving what you're hearing, please be sure to hit the subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on all of our socials for more awesome content. Let's not keep you any further. Here is our chat with Master Peace. Reach out and touch me. Please welcome to This Song Is Yours, Master Peace. Hello, Master Peace. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for, allowing us a bit of time to chat. I know that it is an extremely busy and a bit of a chaotic time for yourself at the moment. I know that there's a brand new debut record out from yourself. It is called How to Make a Masterpiece. And I have to say that you've done pretty much exactly that. Congratulations, mate, on this stunning record.
Thank you so much. Genuinely appreciate it, man.
Of course. How are you feeling with these songs now out in the world and available for everyone to enjoy?
I'm feeling good. Like, I feel like the response has been really, really good. I think because I went into it not expecting anything, so I thought, it, like, me getting the love that I'm getting right now, like, I just didn't expect it. I'll be real, like, I expected to kind of, like, do okay in terms of, like, streaming and all that type of stuff. And then, like, I didn't even expect to get into the official charts. And right now my album's in the official charts. And by Friday, I'll know where I've landed. But it's just, like, even that in itself is just crazy for me because I just didn't expect it. So a lot of things I didn't expect are happening. So, yeah, I feel good.
That's awesome to hear. Well, look, where did I say? I think one publication named it their album of the month for the month of March. I've seen so much positive press for it. And it's like, I'm not simply just saying it because you're on the call with us now, but like, it is well deserved. This is a very strong and very great indie record. So yeah, you should be very proud. I think deservedly so.
Yeah, no, thank you. I really appreciate that. I feel like when you're in it, in the thick of it, you're always kind of, you don't really know what people think. You don't know how they feel about it. And you're just overthinking. You just find yourself in a whirlwind of overthinking. But no, it feels good to kind of like hear that for sure.
Of course. Well, I know that for this record, I think it's been documented that you kind of, as you were in the thick of it, were trying not to have many external influences or kind of things penetrating what was going on with the record as well. This is a, for anyone who's listening to the podcast and hasn't heard this record yet, firstly, we'll make sure that the record is available to stream and buy in the show notes, but it's a stunning kind of collection of 2000s style indie and indie rock and indie dance. I know the phrase indie sleaze has kind of been thrown around as well. I guess for you, what was that original moment of realizing that's kind of what the record was going to sound like sonically? Was it a decision that you made before you were writing, or did you just kind of, as you were creating, came across that that was what had influenced your songwriting?
I had been in America, so I went to America, right? And I was working with the producer, Julian Bonetta, right? And this is like very early on in the process of the album. I didn't take no old songs. All of them were like new, freshly made. And I remember my last day in Nashville before I went to LA, he sat me down and he was just like, do you know where you're going wrong? And I was just like, what do you mean where I'm going wrong? And he was just like, well, you're making indie music, right? But you don't make indie music that people can dance to. And I was just like, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, it's got the indie appeal for like the indie kind of heads. But it's like, where's the indie music that makes the girls dance? Like, where's that type of indie music, you know? And then he started references. He was like, early Calvin Harris and like Friendly Fires. And like, you know, he was like, where are those type of indie songs? And at the time, I didn't really get what he meant by that because, and it really, really stuck with me, like, for a while. Like, I didn't really understand what he meant. Because I was like, there were songs in the past that I've had that I knew that girls, like, would dance to and go, like, at a live show and not just men mosh pitting. But it's like, it never really kind of resonated with me until I left Nashville the day later and I was listening to the references he had said, even though I already knew them, but I just re-listened to it. And I was like, oh my God, he's onto something here. And I hadn't, like, it's like the penny had dropped. I don't know how to explain it. It's like, I was like, indie music where people can dance, like dance, like infusing electronic and dance music with guitars. Well, like, I don't think anybody's done that in the UK in terms of like this current climate. And I was like, if I'm the one to bridge that gap and do it well, I think this album is going to stand. Because it was like, at first, it was really like a guitar album, just straight guitars and indie, like straight, like, just like, you know, like those, like, indie records are just only guitars. Like, it doesn't, it's just one way. There's nothing, like, extravagant about it. It's just like, yeah, this is cool. Like, it was that. And I was like, I knew I could have made that. And I knew I would have pleased everyone with that. But I was like, but are we trying to please people? Are we trying to like stand the test of time? Are we trying to push the boat out? And I just remember just the penny just dropping like there and then. And then I've got to LA. So there were two main producers. There was Julian and there was Matty. So I get to LA and I see Matty. And Matty is like, Julian is right. It's like, yeah, you make great indie songs, but you don't have to pop commercial element to it, the dance commercial element to it, to then give it that, you know, that oomph to kind of make people be like, oh, this is a bit different. So then he just started like adding electronics on all the old stuff that we had done, like dance melodies to all the stuff that we had done. And then I was like, oh my God, this album's going to be an indie sleaze 2000-esque, like indie Tronica like album. Like, as soon as that conversation had happened, it was so random. Like, and imagine we nearly never had that conversation because I was going to leave to just go and meet some friends before I left Nashville. And he literally sat me down in the kitchen. I literally remember what, like, the whole process. Like, I was smoking a cigarette. He pulled me up. He's just like, bro, like, this is where you're going wrong. If you master this for your debut album, I promise you, watch what happens. And yeah, that man absolutely saved this album, 1,000,000%.
I absolutely love that. Well, again, it is a very, very brilliant record. I'm curious for yourself, and I know, rude to ask a gentleman his age, were you around the first time? Obviously, Indie Sleaze has become this incredible rediscovery of 2000s, I want to say, culture and music and fashion and so many different elements of that kind of time. Were you around the first time that this was kind of all going on and taking place and these records were coming out?
Yeah, like in terms of like 2011, 2012, 2013, and going to dances, like as a teenager, like a young like teenager, I was going to like dances, and they'll be playing like the proper sleazy stuff, like the Ting Tings or like, you know, Kesha, or be like playing like, you know, just like kind of like slut pop, essentially, just playing a lot of that. And then like, obviously I used to watch like Misfits and Skins, and like when it was at its peak. So it was like all of those songs that like, even like the intro to Misfits is the Rapture. Echoes, and like again, the Rapture was a big influence on this album. You know, like the very cowbell, the dancing, that type of vibe. So it was like I was always tapped in, but I just didn't know what it was called. You know, like I didn't really know what it was called. I didn't know it was indie music, but I didn't know what it was called. And then also, like, I was a big nerd when it came to like video games. So like FIFA soundtrack was literally like this album is a FIFA soundtrack. That's the best way I can put it. It's like. This, like, everything that influenced me growing up, listening to, like, playing FIFA and just listening to FIFA songs, like, was this album. But it was like, I needed someone to wake me up to realize that's what the album needs to sound like. It, like, cause at the time, it sounded more like a you know, Six Music kind of indie album. And then I turned it into, like, a, yo, FIFA, early 2000s, Friendly Fires type of album. You know what I mean?
So 100%.
Yeah, and I'm so happy I did that, because I don't think people would have been talking about it this highly if I had just stuck to straight guitars, in my opinion.
Have the people from FIFA been knocking on the door yet to add one of the songs to their soundtrack?
You know what's so mad, yeah? They've not shouted me once. Not once. But people tagging them, people messaging them, being like, yo, like, you need his songs on FIFA. Like, you need them, like, exponentially. So let's see what happens this year. Like, obviously FIFA 25. Let's see what happens if they get my tune on there, man.
We will join in on that, on tagging them, putting it out into the universe. We'll somehow send this podcast to them. But I can see that those songs would fit on FIFA. But also would just fit on, I guess, the I'll be totally honest with you. I'm a man in my mid-30s. The mid-2000s to late 2000s was key time for music for me. So listening to this record was very much like revisiting that time, and it was incredible. So maybe that's why I seem to do like it so much. I was wondering...
For you.
What was that?
No, I get what you mean, because like a lot of people kind of like shared that same thought of just feeling like, you know, this is something of that, you know, that era. And yeah, like I just know, like, I knew what I was doing. It's like, because I'm such a music nerd, I knew how this album was going to land. Like, I just knew it. Not in a, like, ego way. It's just like, I just knew, you know?
100%. Like, and the thing is that you've done it very well, because I think, as you kind of said, like, you could have just made like standard indie tunes and it still would have been a great record. But I feel like you've done something, and you've towed a line very well that's like a combination of having it as in like 2000s music, but it still sounds fresh. It doesn't sound like I've just put on like an old Bloc Party record or anything like that. Right. It does still sound uniquely you. So you've done that very well.
Thank you. And I think another thing as well, like, it's just like, I wanted it to be the soundtrack to Gen Z. Like, in terms of like, when I was growing up, I remember when Silent Alarm came out and everybody was talking about that album like it was sent from God, you know? And like, it was like everybody's soundtrack. Same with like Arctic Monkeys. Like, you're growing up in Britain and everybody's just like, oh, the album is like, oh, if you like it, no. You see the first album, can't remember the name of it, but it, like, everybody's like, oh yeah, like that album was like the album to my youth. And like, same with, you know, Bloc Party, Silent Alarm. And think for me, it's like, when you hear people talk about those albums in so high regard, which they are definitely, but I feel like my album can definitely sit next to those albums. Like, my debut album can happily sit next to those albums and be like, yeah, at that moment in time, in 2024, from 10 years from now, kids can be like, yo, when Masterpiece dropped How to Make a Masterpiece, that was like a cultural reset in music. Like, that's what I want for my fans and like for what I'm trying to do here. Do you get what I mean? Because I didn't make this album for things to just kind of be like, oh yeah, like it was cool. It was like, no, like this shit, like, changed everything. Do you get what I mean? And I feel like it is like people are now putting eyes to the sound, which is what I've always wanted, is like people to kind of take in the sound and be like, oh, like, I ain't never heard a kid do this. Like, this is great, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely is, I think, yeah. And again, not to sound hyperbolic, not to say it because you're here, like, I think that it does have the ability to stand next to those records and kind of, there's, as you said, there's nothing like it in 2024. I think it kind of offers people who are getting into music like that, it gives them the opportunity to have their own, like each every 10 to 15 years, there are those records that people go, yeah, that was my.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Like seminal album when I was a teenager. And I think that for a lot of Gen Z people, there is the ability with this record because it does have some fantastic songwriting on it. It has some incredible sonics on it. I was wondering, Peace, if you might kind of indulge me, where you first got your introduction to songwriting, kind of what inspired you to get into it?
I feel like me, when it came with songwriting, is like, there's like songwriters and then there's songwriters, you got what I mean? And I think with me, I came from like a rap orientated background. So it's like, that really served me a lot on this album because it was like, you got to remember like a lot of indie bands, they're not rappers, like, or like they haven't rapped before. Like they come straight off out the womb with a guitar. Whereas me, like, I was, do you know what I mean? I was with like guys that were rapping their ass off. Like I was with guys that like were rapping like they had rent to pay, essentially. So for me, it's like I came from that era. So I come into this kind of like arena and it's like, oh, guys with guitars. And I'm like, how can I like essentially be that, like, how can I stand out? Because it's like, I can't play guitar and I can't do the indie, like the British, like the general indie stuff. I can, but it won't cut through as much because, like, you know how it is in terms of stereotype and all of that in like music, in that type of game. But it was like, I knew I could rap my ass off. That's what I did know I could do, which a lot of people can't. So it was like the flows I was doing on there were a lot of rap flows, but people didn't even realize. It was like, even on Start You Up, it's like the way I'm bouncing on the beat. If that was on a like a grime set, that would be like, yeah, I'd get a wheel up. Like, they probably would have wheeled up the tune. Do you get what I'm saying? So it's like, knowing your strong points and kind of like implementing it on an indie record was just like the most smartest thing I could have done. So in terms of like songwriting, it's like, that's not real. Like, I wouldn't say I'm the best songwriter, but I know how to rap my ass off or like sing the way I sing that can cut through that. Even if I'm saying bullshit, the flow will still kind of like, you know, essentially hit you where you're like, oh, okay, cool. Like he knows what he's doing, you know. Then it'd be a thing where it's like, where I'm just trying to be too clever with it. That's the, yeah, my songwriting isn't too clever. I'm not trying to be too clever with it. I want it to be as simple and as straightforward so it hits home. Like Arctic Monkeys first album, they weren't trying to be clever. They just wanted to get 11 absolute screamers out. Like, they didn't care about being too artsy and fartsy about it. Like, I feel like that's what would have not connected with the youth. And you're trying to connect with youth here. So it's like, I'm not trying to be too, like, I'm John Lennon or, I don't know, someone that's just like a mad songwriter that is just like, you know, I wasn't trying to go that way. I wanted to go as simple but effective as possible.
Do you think that's the point of difference for yourself then, like in terms of the fact that you're not doing it from like a traditional songwriting perspective? And as you said, you've come from a more like rap background to indie music. Do you think that's before when I mentioned like that it is indie music, but it seems to have this fresh take on it? Do you think maybe that's possibly where, yeah, why it's resonating really well is because you're bringing these different elements to it?
Yeah, I think so. I think so because I feel like the guy Julian, again, like he's a white guy himself. And he was like, if there was a white guy doing this, it wouldn't cut through. But because you're a black guy and you've made this type of music and you made it very well, it's going to cut through. And I feel like, yeah, I see why he said that at the time, because it's just like I'm bringing something a bit more, like, yeah, just a bit more like real. Like, it just feels a bit more real. It feels a bit more authentic. It's not trying to be too cool with it. Like, I'm just trying to kind of like hit home what I'm trying to say. So, yeah, like, I think I've done the best I could have in terms of that, of like trying to make it sound different and not make it sound too samey.
100%. I know, I think, where was it? I did read in some press that initially, when playing indie music, that as you said, as like a black indie artist, you found it not difficult, but I think people kept mislabeling the genre of music, or that it wasn't that they couldn't kind of grasp their head around it. And I'm curious for you, like, how did that impact you in terms of wanting to be able to rectify that, or at least get them, show them that you are more than what they're saying, that you are a legitimate black indie artist, and that they're incorrect in how they're kind of labeling your music?
I feel like it was such a struggle, and I always felt like I had to work 10 times harder. Mm. It's like I knew the world I was getting into before I left the kind of like alternative rap world, and it always just felt like it would be me and another white guy, for example. And like the white guy would make all right indie music. Not saying it was shit or anything like that, but like he would make okay. Mm. And then I'd do something that was a push across, like pushing the boat out a little bit. And like, I just get no love at all. Like real musicians, like music heads or like music artists would reach out to me and be like, bro, I don't know how this song isn't massive. And it's like, but like the industry would just be like, oh yeah, rapper Masterpiece jumps on an indie song. Not Masterpiece, indie artist, to help my thing, to push my thing forward. It was just sloppy journalism. And like, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of like, just downplaying my thing for so long, like downplaying it to a point where like, I wanted to quit the Masterpiece project and start a new thing. Because it was like, how long are people going to sleep on me? Like, how long am I going to feel like I'm not rated at all? Mm. Like, and it got to that point where I was feeling it every day, like, and just feel, yeah, I don't know. I just felt really hurt because I was just like, I know how much effort I've put in. So it's just like, when it's not getting received the way I want it to get received, it's a bit of a slap in the face, you know? Like, even like, as little as things as like playlisting. It's like artists would get playlisted in big like Spotify playlists that make indie music. I'd make the same song or even better, no love. Like, you get what I mean? It was like there was a lot of that happening, like, and still kind of does. But it was like that, if anything, fueled me to go even more harder. Like, it fueled me to be like, yo, like, we got to go harder. We got to pull more tricks out of the bag because these guys keep on sleeping and they think that I don't know what I'm doing. When I know what I'm doing, like, I know what I'm doing more than a lot of these people. Do you get what I'm saying? And even like the people that they were co-signing were coming to me being like, yo, like, how did you make this song? Or how did you, you know? And it's just like, those are the same people that are like coming to me and you're not even backing it. Like, the industry just wasn't in support. They just didn't support it whatsoever. Like, from festival gigs to like normal gigs, I'd sell more tickets than a lot of these people, and no love, no love whatsoever. No, like, oh yeah, thumbs up or pat on the back to be like, yeah, big up, you know? So it was like, I was always just feeling like I was working 10 times harder than like the average person. And it just, yeah, it just used to wind me up, and just everything just getting downplayed. And it was a big struggle. Like, I'd be lying to you if I said it didn't get me down, because it did. Like, it was a big, big, big struggle. That's why for me, this album, why I never attached no feelings to it, because I was like, I know how this game works already. So it's like, I'm not going to attach no feelings. If it does well, then great. If it doesn't, then, do you know what I mean? I'm not going to feel away. It's just like, it just is what it is. But it's like, it ended, like, it exceeded my expectations, which I'm just like the other day, Elton John played it on Rocket Hour, and I'm like, what the hell? Like, do you get what I'm saying? So it's like, people that know, like, are backing it. That's the way I can put it. Like, people that know, and then, do you know what I mean? The other people are just like, trying to catch up. So
I feel like before you mentioned the music press, and I feel like, and I also realize the irony of being a music journalist and podcast, but like, there does seem to be a tendency in so many press outlets to like jump on a hype train of like so many, and I mean, no shade to anyone, but like generic indie white boy bands where it's four white guys. Bro, they're playing the same indie rock. Exactly.
All the time. When I tell you, like, I don't know if you guys call it the same thing, but over here in London, we call it press darlings. Like, the press will jump out and be like, oh my God, the best guitar band we've seen in the last 10 years. And it's like, bro, like, you guys are clapping for people that are doing the bare minimum. Like, let's keep it a buck. If I made that same song, the same pocket, the same vibe, everything, the same, you guys will still downplay my thing. And that's to prove to you that it's people don't like what they don't know, you know? And it's like, it's just, I've seen it. The amount of bands that have come out of the UK that everybody put their coins on, or put their money on, that could have put their mortgage on it, and thought they were going to go, and they're just there. And it's just like, this is what you lot keep on doing. You guys keep on putting the money on the wrong people. But it's like, the people that you don't put money on, and the underdogs that are just going through, cutting through, those are the people that are rising. And it's just like, you've downplayed my thing for too long. So I don't even care what you think. It's like, I'm just going for it. I'm like, I'm just attacking it. And who sees it? And the thing is, the people that are seeing it are the people that these people write about and be like, oh my God, they're the best thing. But they're reaching out to me being like, yo, this album is dumb. Like, do you get what I'm saying? It's like, if you're not getting love, like, for this album, like, I don't know what's going on. Do you get what I'm saying? So it's like, that's 100%. How the industry is in the UK. Like, it's just mad. Like, they just gas up anything that is just, like, the bare minimum. And no shade on those artists, but, like, even the artists know it's bare minimum. They know. They probably made the song in, like, 5 minutes. But it's just, like, you'll just get the love. Like, the love will be insane. It'll be like, yeah, this person's nominated for a Brit Rising. This person nominated for a Mercury. This person nominated for literally the most basic guitar riff and the basic lyrics I've ever seen in my life. But then someone like me is just getting, like, I'm making, like, I'm pushing a sound, a thing, like, Sonics. Like, I'm selling tickets. Like, I'm doing 1,000 cap in my hometown. I'm doing stuff that, like, a lot of these people can't do, but no love. It's just like, oh, yeah, sweet. Like, yeah, cool, big up. Like, do you know what I mean? It's just, it's mad. It's honestly mad. And I swear, if I was a psychopath, it would just be fucking, I'd be all over Twitter just spatting and going off, but that's just not my vibe. So I just keep it pushing. I just do what I gotta do.
Look, that's a very smart choice. But I think this, if there hasn't already been one for yourself, I think this will be the turning point. Again, this record is incredible. I wanted to very quickly touch on, if I may, my favorite song on the record, Sick in the Bathroom. Such a good track. Such a great track. I was wondering whether you might be able to just tell us quickly what was the inspiration, or kind of where did this track come from for yourself?
Do you know what's so mad? You're saying that's your favorite track, because the people that inspired this song was actually Australian artists that actually inspired this song. So you like, there's a violin that towards the end, and it goes really thrashy, right? And one song this song reminds me of is the Veronica's Untouched. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was going for. Like, I was trying to make my own version of Untouched. And, like, it's how dark and gloomy it is, but has, like, the element of pop in it. Do you get what I'm saying? And I remember when Veronica's Untouched came out, again, around that time, 2007, 2008, I was so addicted to that violin and the way they sing that hook. Like, I was just addicted to it. And I was like, I need a big indie anthem that, like, sits in that pop world where, like, if I gave it to the Veronicas, they could sing it. So literally, the Veronica inspired that song. Like, I needed that, like, yeah, just that emotional pop, that emotional indie pop rock thing. And I wanted to make it very thrashy and very, like, yeah, you know? So that's why it's so mad that you said that's your favourite song, because literally that was inspired by the Veronicas.
I absolutely love that. That's so awesome. Now that I think about it, and now with that context, it kind of actually weirdly makes sense. So yeah. I absolutely love that. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. I know that I think this record is going to resonate very well with a lot of Australians. I know you just mentioned the Veronicas. I believe you've been on tour with Genesis Owusu, who is one of our favourite exports. I'm very curious. Because I know that you are touring behind the record, is there any chance, maybe at some point this year, maybe next year, that we'll see you down here in Australia in support of the record?
Yeah, we were thinking to come to Australia like August. We were thinking to come down, yeah, like we're trying to figure it out. So I've got a record coming out with another one of your exports, Young Franco.
Oh, cool.
I've got a song coming out with Young Franco, literally like in a month. So, like, you were going to take me on tour. But yeah, like, also, like, I'm loving, like, the Real Otis guys as well. Like, like, it's so mad. I loved them before the Triple J thing. Like, I was just like, yo. But again, like, I'm a music nerd, so I just go look for bands to kind of, like, take in. And, like, I think what they're doing is amazing. So it's like, I want to just go down there just as a fan, just to see it live myself. Like, so I definitely want to come down to Australia and see what's going on, for sure.
I absolutely love that. And the fact that you have that knowledge about Young Franco, about Royal Otis. Peace, very quickly, anytime that you'd like to come back on the podcast to discuss music, you are more than welcome to, because already through this conversation, I can tell that you've got that connection. So I absolutely love that. Lastly, we usually ask our guests what they're currently listening to. I know you just said you're a music nerd, so I'm very, very excited to kind of hear what you might have on high rotation at the moment.
Do you know what's actually on the highway? And I'm not just saying this because this is an Australian podcast. It's Royal Otis. I'll be so real. That album, like, especially Foam, is the song I'm banging. I'm just banging that, like just, like, on repeat. Like, on repeat. So, yeah, I love what they're doing right now. I think the guy, he reminds me of my childhood. Like, his voice reminds me of my childhood. It's very nostalgic. It's very melancholic. And the melodies, it's kind of like a melody I do. That's why I like it. Like, the songs are good. Like, they're just indie songs, but it's the melody. It's like, I'd heard guys sing like that in a very long time. Like, they do R&B melodies on indie songs. And I think that is very impressive. A lot of people can't do that. That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm drawn to it. I just love that album. I think the album is crazy. And I think they're just, yeah, they're fire.
It is an absolutely incredible album. Very solid choice. But as I've said from the start of this podcast, you yourself are holding, I would say, one of the best albums of the year so far.
Thank you so much, man.
No, of course. When we come to the end of the year, I'm sure it's still going to kind of hold that weight as well. I don't see this being knocked off very easily. The album is How to Make a Masterpiece. It is by the artist Masterpiece. But Peace, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast today. I do appreciate
it. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it, man.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.